saw Nickelback, the news.
That's the boss.
I know who it is. It's the Streets of Philadelphia.
It's got a depressing song, but I'll take
it. It is a depressing song. This song, well, especially because it's
I can't make you happy today, Richard. What the hell?
I love you, Denise. Don't worry.
Especially because it's from the movie Philadelphia, which is in itself really a depressing movie. This is a depressing song, and Everybody Hurts by, is that R.E.M.? Is also a depressing song. And there's a phone call coming in on line one, Denise. It might be Ezra. 10 minutes early, but who knows?
Could be Ezra.
Yeah. Anyways, normally, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, this would be the segment where we would do the score update. So that's a good feeling to know. We're going to spare you from having to hear the exciting updates on the exhibition games. Unfortunately, we're watching Toronto and Ottawa here in studio. And
Denise is smiling, so I'm assuming it's Ezzy.
But Ezzy was supposed to just call during at 8:10, so I'm not sure what's going on. Anyways, it's okay. Denise will figure it out. We still have to cover the injuries and NHL news and notes.
Lots of injuries.
We're sort of flying by the seat of our pants here tonight, as it were.
There's
a lot of injuries a week into training camp. It's a ton of injuries. We talked about Matt Stajan already.
The biggest one, though, Drew,
is
the lingering injury from last year when we speak about Mark Savard.
Absolutely. The most concerning one, also.
That's those concussion issues. We have a call here.
Yeah, Denise, is it Ezra? Yeah, it's Ezzy.
All right, get him on.
Ezzy, welcome to the Illegal Curve radio show.
Drew, Richie, how is it going?
We're doing well, Ezzy. How are you doing?
Very good, very good. How's the show going so far?
Very well. Tell us what you know about the MTS Center tonight.
Well, it's actually roaring. There's got to be minimum 13,000 people here. I was sitting in the upper deck with the auxiliary press box area with the auxiliary media, and it wasn't too busy up there, but I actually ran into my brother-in-law, and I'm now sitting basically in the fifth or sixth row, and it's absolutely packed here, and it's loud, too. And it's great. It's been a great atmosphere here.
How's the play on the ice, is it?
It's been pretty good. Patrick Sharp just scored about, I think, 30 seconds into the second. Stamkos scored in the first, so it's 1-1 now. And it's been a decent game. I'd probably say the Lightning has been a little bit better. They've had a few power plays. But I'm actually pretty surprised that that these teams are playing this well, because it's the first game for at least the Hawks. I think it's either the first or second game exhibition game for the Lightning, but the play's been pretty good. It's been decently paced. It's been a little bit sloppy, but it's been pretty good.
Who have you seen up in the press box so far, Ezzy, in terms of media or player representatives or representatives from each team?
Well, as you know, Drew, I was here really early, and I ran into Eddie O.
Eddie Olchuk,
who works for Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. And he's actually, I'm not sure if you mentioned this on air, but he's going to...
We already started
it. All right, so he's coming on October 6th, but I talked to him. I ran into a lot of local Winnipeg media, I'm looking forward to, bumping into a few guys. I obviously ran into our boy Jim Toth from Shaw.
There you go.
And Gary Lawless and Hustler from the Hustler and Lawless show. But there's a lot of media here. Damian Cristadero, who we've had on the show before, is here.
Well,
it's funny because Damian Cristadero's on a show in Tampa right now saying, and Ezra's here from the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Yeah, I bet. No, I passed him, and he was with his other Tampa Bay media guys, and he didn't recognize me. I'm a nobody to him.
You're an everybody to us, Ezra.
That's right, Ezra.
No, but it's going well. It's been a great game, and it's just great to see like this many fans here. It's awesome. So I hope you guys have a good rest of the show, I'm going to see you guys later, right?
We're looking forward to having all your clips on our Fantasy Preview show. You're going to get clips from a bunch of the GMs, players, and coaches. So we look forward to having that on next week, and enjoy the rest of the game.
Yeah, and you're going to be there. You're going to be there in the locker room doing all the post-game scrumming and everything.
Yeah,
right?
About an hour and a half from now, after the third period's over, I'm going to run down there and scrum it up with all the media and try to get as many sound bites as I can.
Awesome. Okay. It's important to note that while the players might just be wrapped in a towel, you should wear pants throughout the entire segment in the locker room.
Hey, no, I'm wearing a. I've never looked this good. I'm wearing my best suit. I've got a tie on.
Oh, there you go.
You guys made sure that I wore a good clothes and didn't come here with the sweatpants, so have a good rest of the show, guys, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Ezzy. We'll see you later on.
Okay, peace, guys.
Bye-bye. There is the Illegal Curve roving reporter, Ezra Ginsberg, reporting live from
really
the MTS Center.
Did you guys really make sure that he cleaned up for this?
Oh, we had no doubts whatsoever. Ezzy's a professional journalist. I mean, we sent out our best representative to the MTS Center tonight. You know, he was up for a national newspaper award.
That's right. He won the award.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, he won the. Did he win? Yeah, an award. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There's a national newspaper award-winning writer Ezra Ginsberg reporting live from the MTS Center. Should we continue on with the injury front?
Let's do it.
Okay, we'll continue on with injuries. We'll get to NHL news and notes. We still got rapid fire. We got a lot still going on. Anyways, Mark Savard's still out. His post-concussion syndrome symptoms are lingering with no real end in sight. The Bruins did deny a report from earlier this week that he would be out for the entire year. This is a scary situation.
Well, this gives a little bit credence to the old, the player who injured should be out as long as the player who's injured.
Yeah,
Matt Cook. Matt Cook's going out playing like nothing happened. And Mark Savard, one of the top National Hockey League players, one of the best passers in the game, terrific hockey sense, really developed into a good all-around player, too, is on the sidelines here. Now, practically speaking, from Boston's perspective, with when you have David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, and Tyler Seguin, it really won't affect you as much as you know it would have affected you last year or even another team without as much center depth. Having said that, he makes players around him better. He is an asset, and he costs a fair amount of money, although that won't be up against the cap if he's on injured reserve. But just in terms of Mark Savard the person and Mark Savard the player and what he's turned into and what's happened, this is a guy's career here. I think he's near 35. It's really unfortunate to see, and you wonder if a guy like that can come back, and if he comes back, will he ever be the same? Not only in terms of the way he plays, although he's not a very physical player, but just in terms of you know how long he could, you know, if he can take a hit. And you know, concussions are a scary thing. It's not something just to mess around with. And Boston's going to take a conservative approach here, which is good. But rumors of him missing the entire season, while I hope they aren't true, I think there's probably a lot more merit to it than some people may realize.
You know, at some point in time, doesn't Mark Savard have to sit down with his family and say, you know, especially, you know, concussions are, you know, the risk increases exponentially each time you get one.
Well, you know,
he can conceivably be hit on a... You know, a simple play, and doesn't have to be dirty, just a simple hit through in the boards or the
like
neutral zone.
When Jaroslav Spatrick hit David Booth last year at the blue line, after Booth had come back from his concussion.
That's right.
It was a harmless hit.
Yeah.
And he's concussed.
Exactly. I mean, at some point in time, he's got to say, what is my long-term life going to be if I continue to get hit? And if I cannot withstand a hit like this, is this going to be back in my mind? Because as soon as it's in his brain when he's on the ice, he's not as good of a player.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I truly believe that, you know, 50 years, maybe 100 years from now, we might look back. NHL, not so much, but football. Let me talk about football for a second. I think we might look back 50 years or 100 years from now and say, I can't believe that we as a society allowed such a barbaric game to be played.
Well, football, there's articles written about it. Football is, people aren't letting their kids play football anymore. And I don't think hockey will get to that point because there's not the, you know, this underlying drug problem that there isn't football that nobody talks about in hockey. I mean, the players are getting faster and stronger and all that, but... You know, you can avoid getting hit in hockey
if
you want to. In football, you can't avoid it. It's just part of the game.
Each single play in football is a car crash. I mean, and at some point in time, I love football. So, I mean, I'm as big of a hypocrite as it comes when I'm on this one.
We cheer the hits, but then we then...
Oh, yeah, but I mean, at some point, like, you know, when these players are going, are really, as they say, you know, involved in a miniature car crash, you know, every single play they're on the field, especially if you're a lineman... When does a society do we say, whoa, maybe we need to change something? I don't know what to change.
And that's why these headshot rules and all these things need to be implemented, you know? The people who are complaining, oh, we don't need the toughness, taking toughness out of the game. It's not taking toughness out of the game. Toughness isn't hitting a guy in the head. Toughness is a shoulder-to-shoulder check. The guy has it coming, You know, we really hope he isn't concussed, but he has a heck of a lot, significantly less chances to get a concussion if he's hit shoulder to shoulder.
If you hit a guy in the shoulder, you might separate his shoulder, and he might have some shoulder pain through the rest of his life.
Right, right.
But he's aware of that risk.
That's right.
You know, you hit a guy in the shoulder, that guy isn't going to wake up with blurry head and vision problems for the rest of his life.
Matt Cook's hit on Mark Savard was blatantly dirty.
Yes.
He is back playing, and he shouldn't be.
He's a dirty player.
And he's a dirty player with a bad track record. If the NHL wants to keep Matt Cooks in the league and have Mark Savard's retiring, then you should maybe be looking to identify the rules. And I've always said the NHL needs to be far more strict on head hits than they are. Colin Campbell, again, a lot of respect for Colin Campbell, but he's not as hard on these plays that as I think he should be. And there's really been no consistency or rhyme or reason for a lot of these rulings. And unfortunately, players like Mark Savard and David Booth are going to be on the sidelines, players who actually have the puck, and can get hit because they have the talent to have the puck on their stick, are going to be hit by guys like Matt Cook.
it's important to note, I mean, you know, this isn't a concussion issue, but a play, you know, Brooks Orpik today in the exhibition game in Pittsburgh between Pittsburgh and Detroit was kicked out of the game in the first period for an attempted knee on Johan Franzen in the same surgically repaired knee that Franzen is just coming back from.
You know, kneeing is part of the game that will always be there. You don't like to see it, but headshots are more of an issue to me. I remember when Dion Phaneuf was playing here a few years ago, an exhibition game against Phoenix, and I saw him line up Dino Carcillo, and he almost basically kneed him. I mean, that happens when you got a little bit headhunters. Brooks Orpik is a physical defensive defenseman who actually played very poorly last year, but a physical defensive defenseman, same like Dion Phaneuf. You can't turn it off, right, Drew?
I guess. I mean, that's the problem. You got on the ice, and you just can't separate the two. No. An exhibition game from a regular game, because you know you don't know that your opponent's going to turn it off and he might just run you.
That's exactly right.
I mean, that's the problem. You have to always play on the edge. I mean, that's sort of the issue. Let's move on with the injury on the injury front.
Yeah.
Chris Drury broke his finger, out 4 weeks. What is this? How big of an injury is this to the Rangers?
Yes and no, Drew. I mean, his name value carries more than his play on the ice now. He plays in all situations, although power play has been a sketchy part of his game for a while now, at the end of last year. Will it affect their game? Sure, because he can play center, and they can't score much. So it has an effect, but he's not the player he once was, so the effect is not as significant.
So you're not too... I mean, the Rangers have other problems.
Not that the Rangers have other problems, Drew. Just that, you know, their strength of their game will be defense and goaltending. So while Mystery is a defensively responsible player, I think as long as their defense and goaltending plays well, I think they'll be okay. You know, okay, meaning like as a middle class Eastern Conference team.
You know, this question just got raised in the chat room, and I was going to ask you it anyways.
Sure.
You know, again, it's like turning it on, turning it off. You know, he broke it. You know, he blocked a shot in the preseason.
You know, Drew, that's the way he plays. And you know what? One guy will say, well, I can't believe he's blocking a shot. Same guy. People will say this. You know, I can't believe he's blocking a shot exhibition. That same guy will go to his friend and go, well, you practice how you play.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it. I don't think you can play on two different speeds.
So,
or the second you start being able to play on two different speeds, it's going to affect you in the regular season, and then somebody's going to say, "Why aren't you blocking that shot?"
An exhibition is glorified practice, so it's practice how you play.
Yeah,
he's a leader, right, Drew?
Yeah, very true. Next with the injury and with the guy we talked about earlier already, Jordan Staal. Really, an odd situation, and he continues to get odder.
Is odder a word?
No, probably not. More odd. But, I mean, this guy who had foot surgery in the off season, developed an infection, and has now had to have another procedure that's put him out for 5 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, a significant injury on a team. We talked about this before, I think. It wasn't last week. It was 2 weeks ago. For a team that lacks scoring, you know, they talked about Malkin Crosby possibly playing on the same line. Well, Staal, he's not playing third-line center. He's playing second line. And he's scoring goals for them, and he's obviously a terrific penalty killer, one of the best in the league, one of the best two-way centers in the league. You can't understate the importance of him to this team. So... you know, without him, they could get off to a slow start here. And again, you know, home ice advantage isn't the be all and end all. Considering last year you saw Philly and Boston playing Philly and Montreal playing in the conference finals, which were
7 and 8 seed.
I think 7 and 8 seed or 6 and 8, whatever it was.
7 and 8.
Yeah, 7 and 8. So I mean, it's not the be all and end all, but it's important. And if you're Pittsburgh and you have start off slowly and you're playing at Washington in Game 7 of the conference finals, not at home.
You're just saying it. You're saying it's you're saying a home ice is overrated. So that's potentially what that's
really what's at stake here. Yeah, both teams are gonna make the playoffs. Pittsburgh's gonna be fine, and Staal will return in a little bit here, hopefully earlier rather than later. But it's early in the season points that get you into those home ice spots.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Next injury. I think that's probably the last one on our list. Filip Kuba.
Yeah.
Broke his leg. You know, I broke his leg really just in practice. It wasn't even in a game situation.
Yeah, well,
you know, out 5 to 6 weeks. What does this do? What does he mean for the Senators defense?
He means a lot, Drew, but I mean, he's already been injured a lot, so the team's used to playing without him. You got Chris Phillips, and you have Sergei Gonchar, and you have Carlson. You have guys. You have some depth there. You have the most loaded team on defense, but you have some depth there. Now, Kuba's a good puck mover. Now, his importance is obviously he can play big minutes, too, but his importance is maybe a little bit... less than it was last year because you have Gonchar and you have puck movers. When last year they were so limited in terms of how much they could, we talked about it two segments ago, how they can move the puck from defense to offense. Without Kuba, you're affected there, but when you have Gonchar, you can take a little bit of that burden away.
Right. So, I mean, you'll just rely on, I mean, you know, it makes the Gonchar signing look all the smarter not that it was a bad signing to begin with.
In 2 years it might look bad, but I mean, you're signing him because you need to add to the power play and you need to add puck movement back there.
And it looks like you're not, I mean, you're not satisfied with, I mean, you're unex, you know.
You should have a very good power play with Sergei Gonchar and Jason Spezza
and
Alfredsson and Kovalev and guys like Fischer to muck it up and Foligno. You know, you should have a good power play. You really should.
Sort of interesting. Nobody's, you know, the Spezza, and not that anybody really expected Spezza to be traded, but it's not even a training camp issue in Ottawa from the sounds of it.
Well, that's my boy, Jason Spezza.
I've been
backing him up on the show for as long as we've been on the air,
a
year and a half, a little more than that. And I think he's going to have a good year. And I think that if Brian Murray was made a good decision not trying to trade him, not training this guy, because he's underappreciated. And I think what he brings to the table is far more than people give him credit for. And makes it look easy, kind of like Joe Thornton. But his playoff pedigree is yet better than Joe Thornton.
Okay, there you go. That's a roundup of the NHL injuries. Of course, if anyone's been injured in an exhibition game today, we're not sure of it yet, and we'll deal with it next week. But that's okay.
Right.
That's a roundup of the major injuries right now. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do NHL news and notes. We got rapid fire still to come. We got cheers and jeers. It's your three favorite segments. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. .20 on the nose. You're back on the Illegal Curve Radio Show on this Wednesday night. I have no idea what song this is after we've criticized your first two choices tonight.
Sounds good, though.
I dig it.
Do
you know what it is?
That's some guitar tapping going on? Tapping technique?
Ooh, it is a little bit of tapping.
I don't know.
You guys are just making up
stuff.
I think
Eddie Van Halen started that technique.
Did he?
Denise, what song is this?
Is that Eddie Van Halen, Denise?
No, it's not. It's Kings of Leon.
Okay.
Well,
I really
like that.
Does anybody want to go use somebody? Because I could sort of go do that.
I really like that CD they released. Not this last one, the one before, but obviously got completely overplayed, and now I hate it. But isn't there a new one they just put out?
I think they have a new
one. Yeah, that's off the new one.
Yeah, how's that? CD? I didn't listen to it.
I know the first song sounds pretty good. I haven't listened.
My brother was really into the CD before that. He thought it was very good.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Well, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey and Music Show, apparently. It's time for NHL News and Notes.
NHL. NHL News and Notes.
Well done, Remus, as always. Starting in Washington tonight. Actually, we're starting in Washington for the first three of these NHL News and Notes, so we thank the Capitals for making some news this week. The Caps agreed to a contract extension with goaltender Michael Neuwirth on a $2.3 million deal with an average annual salary cap hit of $1.15 million. Is Michael Neuwirth a good enough goaltender to lead the Capitals to the Stanley Cup?
Again, Drew, I mean, it remains to be seen. Talent-wise, yeah, he has a talent. I mean, look at the talent. Look at the netminders who took their teams to the Stanley Cup last year. Neuwirth's more talented than Leighton, for sure. I don't know about Nami, but he has the potential. I really like what I saw of him when I saw him in the AHL. Athletically, positionally, very sound. I actually wrote about him in the Puck Perspectives book. I think he's got a lot of talent. Him and Varlamov are going to battle it out, but he's on the books this year for 0.8 on the salary cap, and then he goes up to 1.15, very reasonable term. If he does have a big year this year, or Varlamov, but if Neuwirth has a big year, it's going to be a bargain for the next two.
Okay, fair enough. Sticking there with Washington, they agreed to a contract extension with Tom Pody, defenseman.
Yeah.
2 years, $5.75 million, an average annual salary cap hit of $2.88 million, give or take
which is actually pending a UFA after this year, Tom Pody, which is actually a pay cut from his average annual value of his salary, which is 3.5 right now, up against the cap. The 2.8, you said?
2.88, give or take a few pennies.
This guy, Tom Pody, who's really changed his game. I mean, he played in Edmonton, he played in New York, where he was really disliked. For whatever reason, you know, he was the guy, the whipping boy in Edmonton, and kind of New York, too. His personality wasn't exactly one that would garner some attention in New York. But the guy can move the puck. He plays a tougher game than he used to. He's become a better all-around defenseman. And at $2.8 million, I think there's some value here for Washington. I think this is actually a very good signing. Tom Pody, if not asked to do too much, you know, he's 33, 34 years old. You're signing a two-year deal. There's not that much risk involved. I think this is a good contract for Washington. I thought it was a good job here by George McPhee.
See, I thought they might have overpaid a bit for him.
I disagree. Drew, I mean, the guy plays in all situations. He's a valuable player, and he's a positive impact on the team. And while he's not the number one, number two guy that people thought he was when he came in Edmonton, he's a solid number three, and you're paying 2.8 for him. I like that.
Is he playing a number three role on that Washington defense, though?
Absolutely he is.
Who's
Mike Granger, number one.
Yeah.
They're trying to look for the number two.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is he going to – I'm so worried that he's going to be relied on to play a number two when he's
– Maybe, but you're paying him – he's basically your number three, and you're paying him probably as much – you know, probably less than on a top team like that, that you'd be paying for a number three guy.
Okay.
And you'd get him to take a pay cut willingly.
Well, I think the pay cut just speaks to the, you know, you look at the salaries that are being signed really by the players who aren't superstars, and they're all very, you know, obviously they're not low for the average guy, but they're much lower than we're used to.
In perspective of the NHL, yeah.
In perspective of the NHL. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit in rapid fire, but you look at, I mean, the one that really jumped out at me is the signing this week by, what are, my brain has gone absolutely blank here.
Which?
The Hurricanes, Carolina.
Signing this week. Patrick Sullivan.
I can't believe, I mean, okay, we'll switch around the order of NHL news and notes here. But, I mean, moving into Patrick O'Sullivan, he signed with the Hurricanes. It's a guy who's got an average of 0.532 points per game in the NHL. He signed a two-way deal, and even at the NHL, he's making $600,000. That's his the high, his salary ceiling this year is $600,000. That's nothing. It's peanuts.
Yeah, I mean, Drew, he was actually involved in the Carolina when they made that three-way deal, the Eric Cole,
right.
Patrick O'Sullivan, Justin Williams deal.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Patrick O'Sullivan fan. I think his game is soft. He's got a good shot. He's got a pretty good skater. A contract like that, Drew, you hit on the nail on the head. I mean, you can't go wrong. You have him on a two-way deal. You have nothing holding him back. You're paying $100,000 in the AHL. You're paying $600,000 in the NHL. I don't see a downside. I mean, he can play a third-line role if you want him to, and he can. He has some talent to play in the top two lines. You know, night in, night out, no, I don't count on him. And night in, night out, he has a lot of flaws in his game. He doesn't go into the corners as well as soft. And
if you know his limitations, and I mean, you know, everybody knows his limitations. They're not a secret to anybody.
That's why he's out here right now,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And you put him into the positive situations where he can take advantage of what you say. I mean, he does have a sort of a dynamic offensive game there.
He's been given a lot of opportunity, though, Drew, I think. That's one thing people have to realize. So Patrick O'Sullivan was given a shot in L.A., a team that doesn't want to get rid of good, young, valuable players. A shot in Edmonton, a team that is trying to build more with good, young players. That, you know, those are one of those red flag signs, right? Teams that like good, cheap, young talent.
Is giving up on them.
Who get rid of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Not that he was cheap before, but originally he was.
That's a fair point, but you pair him with a guy who will do the dirty work that he doesn't like.
Well, you're
I think Carolina could have a bargain on their hands
that
here.
You have, like, you know, you have the Drayson Bowmans, and you have the Zach Boychuks. And you have, you know, this Skinner that you drafted in the first round this year.
Yeah.
You have Brett Carson
everybody
on the back end.
By the way, everybody is raving about Jeff Skinner.
Yeah, and you have Brett Carson on the back end. And you have some talent there. And I wrote about it, again, in the book about...
Shameless plug,
no, but
number
like,
three.
You focus on these teams. I read about it. Yeah, that was number three. I read about it on the book, and I talked about, you know, the team. Carolina is moving in the right direction. Now, this year, they understand it's a rebuilding year. But there's talent there. And when you're banking on young talent like that, and you have Eric Staal as a, you know, pardon the pun, the stalwart as a center up front, and you know that even when your rebuilding's done, he'll still be, you know, on the good side of 30 in terms of his playing career. A lot to look forward to there.
Moving back to Washington, we spoke about the story last year when it first broke, and then it sort of fell by the wayside, and I thought it would get more attention, but it never did.
Okay.
A chiropractor who treated three Washington Capitals has pled guilty to steroid charges, distributing steroids. You know, I sort of thought that, not that I think steroids are tremendously prevalent in the NHL, because I don't think that they are. But I thought that this story might have more legs, and it fizzled out before it became anything. You think that it has been given a fair look at from the media, or do you think it was all much ado about nothing?
I'm not so sure it was much ado about nothing, but it's been stonewalled quite well by the National Hockey League.
Yes. I mean, I think that we'd be naive to say there's no steroid abusers in the NHL. I think there's steroid abusers in all sports, and there always will be, because the drugs, the synthetic drugs, the performance-enhancing drugs, will always outpace the testing.
Do I think it's a huge problem in the National Hockey League? No. No.
Okay. That's, you know, it just sort of jumped out at me as something.
The best players, you know. I mean, you still have to be able to play. I understand they'll play the game argument for even homers, but, you know, that much more speed on your shot, that kind of that much faster. The thing about steroids is they bulk you up. I'm not sure if they make you that much faster. They make you slower.
Bulk,
maybe
bulk
stronger. How much does strength really matter in the National Hockey League? I mean, it matters to a point, but it's really
there's no muscle men playing in the NHL for the most part.
If people talk about strength in the National Hockey League, well, if you play any hockey before, you know that you can be your balance on your skates that creates a strength. Doesn't necessarily need to be a muscle strength. It's a balance. It's a different kind of strength. People have to realize it's not like basketball or running. You're on your skates,
And when you're low to the ice, like a Crosby, you know, that kind of strength is different than a muscle strength. So I don't think steroids will ever really become a huge issue in the National Hockey League. But in terms of enforcers, again, as you said, we'd be naive to think that's probably not an issue.
Ray Shiro, Penguins general manager, got a 5-year contract extension through the 2015-2016 season. First of all, it boggles my mind that we're discussing contracts in the latter half of the this decade already, but that's okay. You know, has Ray Shiro really done as good of a job as people give him credit for?
Well, we've talked about this before on the show, Drew. Yes and no. I mean, you, again, as Steve Tambolini, you can't give a guy credit for being bad. You know, Malkin, Crosby, and he came in later than that, Stahl, Fleury. I mean, you have top five picks. All those are top five picks, and they're the center pieces of your team. Now, he made a trade for Marinosa that I thought was a little bit much at the time. Turned out well, and now those guys ended up turning out, and he went to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I like what he did this summer. So he's really, you know, gone to my good graces because of the Paul Martin signing.
Let me just interrupt for a second. You mentioned the Marian Hossa trade. That really looks a lot better now, yeah, especially because Angelo Esposito can't crack the Thrashers lineup. He's been sent back down to the minors already.
Right. So I like what he did with Paul Martin. I like what he did with Zdeněk Mihajlík. I like the way that, you know, defense is looking a little bit. Some of those guys may be overpaid, but he's got Fleury, who I like. The problem he has had is he hasn't been able to address the wing.
That's the question. He hasn't done it this offseason.
No, but will he do it? Probably. I like the fact that he's aggressive. I like Richard. I think he's a very good general manager. I like the fact that he's aggressive. I like the fact that he's willing to take a risk. So do I think it's a good thing for them to sign him up for 5 years? Yeah. I mean, you know, recognize the talent you have in the management and lock him up because, you know, if your other team's going to be offering Toronto-like money or stuff like that, you could worry about losing him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think it's also important to point out when Ray Shiro deals these first-round draft picks or these second-round draft picks, he's dealing low first and low seconds because the Penguins are always at the top, you know, or the top five in the NHL the most part.
That's right.
So, you know, how is he going to afford to give up all these first-round draft picks? Well, I mean, it didn't work out last year with Grabowski. But Ponikarovsky.
Right. That was a second-round pick.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm talking about the top pick.
Fifth or whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, I still think that, you know, the risk is worth it. Especially, I mean, the problem is he's just getting these rental guys. I think Pittsburgh might be on the lookout for a winger earlier in the year rather than just waiting for the trade deadline this season, if somebody comes available for whatever reason.
They have some depth on the back end, Drew, to watch for. Those two signings, they maybe could deal a guy, you know, you might bank on Letang. Maybe you say, well, we have Letang, we have Goligoski.
Yeah.
Which guy is more valuable to us in terms of an offensive role? We'll trade the other guy and get an affordable winger. Similar to the kind Ryan Whitney, Chris Kunitz. Now at a younger age, both Goligoski and Letang, maybe getting a younger forward there. But that idea, right? Depth to a different team for depth.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
What else do we have listed here for New York Islanders? Have committed to staying on Long Island until 2015. Now, this surprises me because, you know, really, Charles Wang has been quite outspoken about how he's out of New York the first opportunity he gets if they don't approve his Light Harbor deal or Lighthouse Harbor deal or whatever it is.
Hollow threats.
Well, I mean, is this evidence that there is really nowhere else for Charles Wang to take this franchise?
Well, Winnipeg and Quebec City are accounted for.
I mean, can we now stop talking about Kansas City?
Were we ever talking about Kansas City?
Well, some people were talking about Kansas City. Somewhere. I never thought it was going to work just because they look at any place that's got an empty arena.
This is my question. Has anybody from Kansas City ever expressed an interest in having an NHL team?
Not as far as I know.
The fans? Fans.
I mean, the only reason that people thought is because it's a... I mean, I think that arena has to do with the Kings owner, Ann Schultz, something.
Right.
One of his arena properties. But, I mean, it's just...
All the NHL needs to do is drop right into Kansas City. That's what they need to do.
You're saying that's not solving the problem?
That's contributing to the problem, Drew.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it just seems like it's another... I mean, I don't know. Is that just, you know, is Philip Wang realizing that? Is he now... Charles Wang. Who's Philip Wang?
I don't know.
Okay, well, Charles Wang. I mean, now does the city of Long Island or the town council there or whatever realize, look, we don't have to approve this guy's deal? You know, he's got nowhere he can go. Does he have any leverage?
They're going to work something out there, Drew, because you don't want to lose. Long Island is the main sports property that borough has.
Yeah, the Islanders, you mean. Right. They don't have really, there's nothing else remotely.
People have to realize that, you know, New York Rangers play in Manhattan. Well, actually, there's more money in Long Island than there is in Manhattan.
Yeah, well, because
Long Island's like the richest area to live in New York, right?
Yeah, well, it's because the people who live there who are the ones who work in Manhattan.
That's right.
I mean, that's where they. Yeah,
and so. I mean, and that's what I mean in terms of like the fan base is a very rich fan base.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So I mean, it's certainly not a.
And hockey in that area is a lot of history. I realize they've been bad for a long time, and that's why the fans haven't been turning out in droves, because the building is garbage, and the team's been garbage. But the team's moving in the right direction, and now if they can get a new building, then that organization, that's the kind of market that can turn around quickly. The problem for the Islanders is that because of they get low gate, and they're exempt from the revenue sharing because of the market they're in, because it's too big. So they're taking it on the chin, year in, year out, until they get good or they get a new arena.
This is an interesting one. Remus just tweeted it, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Twitter if you want. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about Jody Shelley,
yeah,
being in a band?
Band, yeah.
And he played the harp?
The harp, yes.
Yes. Apparently, this is Tim Panaccio's Twitter feed from Comcast Sportsnet out of Philly. He's reporting that no matter what it says on Wikipedia, Jody Shelley does not play the harp. "Quote unquote, I don't even know what a harp is what Jody Shelley said.
So, good Manitoba boy.
I think we may have been taken for a bit of a ruse there a few weeks back, based on that reporting, shoddy reporting on my part. Obviously, I forgot to check out three sources.
Drew.
To find out about Jody Shelley's harp playing
ability.
What
was the band name again?
Mumford & Sons. I'm pretty sure.
Are they still? Do Mumford & Sons exist?
As he liked them on Facebook. My brother texted me that day and said that he loved Mumford & Sons. I think we need to get this guy on the air.
Your brother?
Panaccio. No, Tim.
He writes for Comcast. Yeah, he used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
I think we need to look deeper into the story.
I think we do.
And so, not to talk about anything on the on-ice play.
No,
to find out more about the...
That's right, yes, about, of course.
I don't want to call it harp gate, because everything's a gate. I'm not interested in any more gates. Yeah. What would this be?
Probably fence.
Harp fence?
Can't be a gate.
How about
a
moat? How about a moat in honor of
the next city?
We
could
do a
moat.
Oh, yeah.
It's a harp moat.
They're putting a moat in front of the arena, right? We talked about it last week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think somebody's actually just opening up one of those fire hydrants and the water is leaking out in front of the arena. That's what they're doing. Yeah, it's almost like a moat, you know, minus the pirates and whatnot. Last thing we'll talk about, and we spoke about it last week, John Manley. Was the
you love to get a political topic in here every week,
when it's relevant I can do it. John Manley was the cabinet minister who initially approved the government monies going to helping the NHL franchises. This week he warned the current conservative government that they do so again at their own peril. We haven't heard a lot about it. It seems like the conservatives backtracked really quickly on that. Can we say that Quebec City, or that can you say confidently that the federal government's not going to be paying $200 million for a $400 million arena in Quebec City?
You're more of a political aficionado than I am, Drew, but let's put it to you. I'll put it to you this way. If they're contributing any money, it's going to be far less than that in amount, and there's going to be far more private money involved there, because the idea that the city, province, and federal government would foot an the entire bill of a professional hockey franchise's arena, or an arena in Quebec City, right? I mean, is it just outlandish? I can understand the government's putting in money if there's private money, but it's just absurd. And again, you know more about this stuff than I do.
I would agree with your assessment on this one, though. That does seem like a fairly straightforward assessment that, you know, government will contribute, but they want the private sector to be the right. Main contributors, the main money people behind a development That's deal right. like that. But I got to tell you, I do want to see an arena with a moat.
Yeah, you know.
There's something about it, you know. If only, what's his name in Grand Forks, the most luxurious arena I've ever been to.
Ralph Engelstad?
Yeah, Ralph Engelstad. If only he had thought of a moat before he was putting marble and granite throughout the entire Ralph Engelstad arena on the UND campus.
It's a checkered past, that man.
Well, you know, who amongst us doesn't have the world's largest collection of Nazi memorabilia? Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Missing the start of the illegal
fall to pieces.
Yes, it is. You're missing the start of the Illegal Curve road trip. In fact, to go see Slash, isn't that right, Remus?
I am. I'm.
Sing a sing fall to pieces.
No, I'm good, guys. Not today.
I saw Slash and Velvet Revolver here. Weren't you at that concert too?
I was at that concert.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great show. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Mm. You look excited for Friday night's concert, also?
Oh yeah, I can't wait. I'm already started drinking to get ready for it. No, just kidding.
You're not kidding by that much. Now, how are you feeling about your ride down to Minneapolis with Ezra on Saturday morning?
Are you feeling confident? Are you lacking in confidence with Ezzy driving down? Are you worried that you might
can I
not
recommend,
get through the border?
Can I recommend travel health insurance?
God forbid.
God forbid, I'm saying, of course. But, you know, they might. I'm not saying because you're going to get into an accident. I'm just saying because you might get stranded on the side of the road somewhere and have to eat, you know, shrubs or something for a little while.
Ezzy's actually going to use his Tim Hortons card at Starbucks in the state.
I'm confident in our abilities, you know, to get down there. I've made some, you know, good. I got a stack of, you know, like 20 CDs now for the car.
Yeah, that's what you need. You need things to distract the two of you while you're on that car trip.
Hard, who fills in for Remus, has Ezzy and Remus getting there 24 hours after they leave in the pool.
Funny, yesterday he had them going to Idaho.
Yeah. South Dakota.
No, South Dakota was my vote.
Okay.
Yeah, so far the confidence level of you guys making it there in time is not high, I got to tell you.
I'll have a GPS.
Which is, in fact, the exact opposite of what you guys will all be.
I don't know. I have a GPS. I'm confident I'll be able
to. I can't
to
wait for that
it.
McDonald's drive-through on Pembina Highway on the way down.
Man,
Ezzy's hash brown.
I just can't wait for $5 footlongs. They have them in the States. Every sub, $5.
Well, also, we are... Oh, yeah. First of all, you're not going to Subway. Jimmy John's is right around from where our hotel is.
Jimmy John's is a good sandwich place.
That is a good sandwich place. You can't go wrong with a Jimmy John.
Not familiar with that place.
Really?
No.
You really need to check out the Jimmy John's.
Fresh sandwiches is terrific.
It really is a good... It's really some good food. Anyways, if you're in the Minneapolis area and going to the Vikings game this weekend, we'll all be there, so you can come check us out. It's the inaugural Illegal Curve road trip, and I believe isn't the radio show going to be mentioned in the ad there?
Dude, you're ruining the surprise.
Yeah, no,
the surprise for
who?
I
actually saw that on the website under group packages that we were going to get on the Jumbotron. So,
oh, you saw that?
So I already knew. I was going to ask you, but I figured you were going to surprise.
Somebody's got to be. The problem is one of us has to be monitoring the Jumbotron to make sure we see that.
Well, Ezzy's monitoring.
Assuming they get there in time. Denise, it's time for for rapid fire.
You know, Drew, you screw that up every
week. Every week. Come
like
on.
3 weeks in a row, man. Honestly.
Rapid fire.
When I turn on the highlights and I see the rookie highlights of the Anaheim Calgary game, I want to puke.
That's good information.
Very good pickup.
Roberto Luongo.
He's still tough.
Dustin Byfuglien.
He's still a good leader.
Beast of a power forward.
What, do you want me to ref?
It's believed that later on in the season, Phoenix Coyotes tickets are going to be available in the Show and Save book.
Rapid fire.
It has been handled poorly.
Harness the talent.
Kelly Kissio.
Ezra Ginsberg may have more Facebook friends than the Phoenix Coyotes have fans at their games.
And I believe that's actually the number has increased this week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
there's some
good... Here, you know what? Why don't I do a live number as we're talking here?
Okay. I do... if you're listening, Ezra, you don't even have to know Ezra, because he doesn't know any of the people on his Facebook.
Yeah. But he has 2,240 friends.
In fact, add him right now, because if I'm not mistaken, he's been banned temporarily by Facebook from adding new people.
And of course, as I go onto his wall, I see a reference... I got referred to on his wall, so I feel somewhat lucky.
Okay.
And Ezzy likes Mumford & Sons.
Yeah.
Well, it's worth the comedy, my friends.
All right. Trust me, it is the funniest Facebook follow you'll ever do. You know, just follow Ezzy. That's all we can tell you. Starting off with rapid fire. After some morbid, and I'm really talking morbid, confusion last week, I'm thrilled to report that Pat Burns is still alive. The response he gave to reports of his death was highly entertaining.
Oh, good.
Pretty much, it's not appropriate for young ears on the program.
Just like give the bleeped up version.
Well, you can do it, Richie, if you want.
Well, and when reference to the report that he had passed away, Pat Burns said, "Far bleeping from it."
Exactly. So you know, this is a guy
still around. So that's great to hear. His attitude, obviously, is a good one, and we wish him all the best.
What I found interesting about the whole, you know, is he alive? Is he not? Sort of saga that was going on.
Terrible,
as
by
unseemly
the way.
As it is.
Just awful.
Just terribly unseemly. Like, let the family announce it.
I can understand wanting to. I can understand the argument behind trying to get the story out there. If it's a trade or a signing, this is a different thing, guys.
Yeah,
this is life.
Exactly.
This is life and death.
Make sure you got sources.
This is another level. You know, who even wants to be the one to go out there and break that kind of news? Like,
exactly. Let the family do it, and
happens.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, it didn't happen, so we're glad about that. But
right.
As an addendum to that, Bob McKenzie really wrote a nice emotional piece, a tribute to Pat Burns. My question is, did you find it odd that a former head coach and a member of the media would have such a close relationship?
That's old fashioned, Drew. I mean, remember, this goes back, coaching going back to the early 90s in Toronto, where they probably forged their relationship. And let's be real here. I mean, back in the day before this new media, and it's obviously evolved over time now, but the relationship between the media, between the writer and the coach and the manager, and used to be far closer than it is now. And
and managers and coaches are now far more guarded, but there used to be friendships. They see each other all the time, and they became friends, and I think that's something that, we miss in this day and age because there's a lack of trust, and Bob McKenzie probably heard 100 things from Pat Burns that he never repeated. You know, it's like Peter Yammons, baseball writer, saying, I report 5% of what I hear.
That's right. Because and you
know, not anymore, right?
Well, and the second, unfortunately, that trust gets violated, you know, that's where the lines of communication close off. So I
Bob
mean,
McKenzie's the
he's
best
a professional
in the business for a
exactly
reason, right?
Exactly right. Moving on, new Lightning head coach Boucher, currently in action tonight at the MTS Center
that's
in Winnipeg,
right.
has banned fighting at Lightning training camp.
Right.
This is in stark contrast to the Toronto Maple Leafs camp, where players have been encouraged to fight in the lunch line. Which of the two styles, or something in between the two, do you think is best for a team?
You know, I think it's a progressive move. Interesting. You know, it's maybe counterintuitive to the game of hockey itself. And then, you know, you're supposed to go by, you know, go kind of by a whim. You want to be fighting and as a reactionary move. But banning fighting, I think, in your own training camp is actually a progressive good idea because it is a way of intending to prevent injuries. That's the biggest thing here. Forget all the other reasons why preventing injuries. And there's a risk when you fight. You hit a helmet and you break your hand. There's no need for it. You shouldn't be fighting your own teammates. You can battle for the puck, but you shouldn't be fighting your own teammates. And I applaud him. I absolutely commend Guy Boucher for this decision. I think more coaches should look forward to doing that. Now, if you have a guy like Ron Wilson who wants to foster that kind of – I understand that too. But it's a lot – you're a lot – less worried about Jay Rosehill breaking his hand, you know, or the other guys who are fighting in this team breaking their hand, than you know, than some of the Tampa guys who are a little bit more talented. But, you know, I can understand the merit in both sides of it. I don't think one's right or one's wrong, but I see his point, and I give him credit for being different, for going in a different direction.
Yeah. Okay. Atlanta Thrashers prospect Patrice Cormier pled not guilty to assault stemming from the hit last year on Mikael Tam during a QMJHL game. We covered the hit in extensive detail. It was one of the more sickening on-ice activities from last
season.
It was,
absolutely, Drew.
Do you think that Cormier's actions warranted an assault charge and a subsequent court case?
I don't. I'm not so sure where the courts stand, you know, how I feel like the court's place is in the National Hockey League, or sorry, in hockey or in the hockey, you know. Stick offenses are one thing. Elbow's a little bit different, I think. Did he intentionally run up the ice and slash the guy in the head? No. I mean, it was the elbow was out too far and it was dirty, so I'm not defending the play at all. It's tough. This is a tough one, Drew. I go both ways on this one. I would probably err towards no. But at the same time, I mean, if you let these guys get away with it over and over and over again, there should be some kind of you know, justice system in place if the CHL isn't going to police itself. So, I mean, I'm sitting on the fence there, or, you know, on the gate.
On the gate, yeah. On the gate, as a word.
I am. That's a tough one.
Okay. We talked about him earlier on the program, but we'll talk about him again. Olli Jokinen, Alex Tange are playing on a line with Jerome McGinley at the start of Calgary Flames training camp. Even if Mika Kiprusoff performs at his usual all-star level, is the Flames' success this year dependent on how well that line performs?
Yes. In a word, I mean, Kiprusoff can be great. He was last year. The defense can be pretty solid. I mean, they need more from Bomeister, but the defense can be pretty solid. But if that line doesn't get going, if Jokinen, you know, that's their first line. If that line, those players don't click, then you're not going to make the playoffs. And, yeah, I mean, it comes down to that. It's crazy enough to think that Jokinen and Tagge, guys brought off kind of the scrap heap, quote unquote, are going to be the guys deciding if they make the playoffs. But, yes, and the chemistry, you know, it'll take time to evolve. But Tagge and Ginla already have that chemistry. Can Jokinen develop chemistry with them is the question. It's going to be an interesting season in Calgary, which it always seems to be, but especially now because it seems like Sutter's job's on the line. And so,
do you think Sutter gets the entire year?
Depends.
Like if
not necessarily. I guess it's an advantage for him that his brother's a coach.
If 55.
I think Brent Sutter's a good coach though, so I don't necessarily think that firing Daryl Sutter will mean firing Brent Sutter.
No, I don't think there's necessarily a correlation there either. I think everyone assumes that, but I don't necessarily see that. But
right.
You know, you would think that Brent Sutter would have some sort of input into the team his brother's giving him.
I would agree with that, but I mean, where's the creative ability there?
Exactly.
They have no cap space.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. The Toronto Maple Leafs have put up a life-size poster of Nazem Kadri in their media room.
Yeah.
As a result of doing so, I would think the expectations for the rookie have now increased exponentially.
Are the Leafs
making the right move in adding the weight of high expectations onto the rookie's shoulders?
Good question. No, I don't think, because I don't even know if he's proven he can make the National Hockey League team. He hasn't even played in the AHL, which is rumors he might play there. I think you're placing too much pressure on a guy's shoulders who isn't right now. He might be capable of it, but if he is, let him do it under the radar, as under the radar as you can do it in Toronto. I don't like heaping praise upon players and pushing, you know, putting pressure upon players when you don't need to. I mean, you're gonna be bad. Deal with it. Don't put him up on a pedestal when he doesn't need to be. Don't place more pressure on the youngster's shoulders than he needs to. I mean, this is a guy that played really well with in the CHL with London with John Tavares there, and he had a good season last year too. But he's put on muscle, which he has. He needs to be able to play in traffic. He needs to understand when to pass puck, when to not get hit because he carries the puck for too long. And there are flaws in his game. He's no shoo-in. So why put all this pressure on him? I don't get it.
It doesn't seem to make much sense to me either.
No. Ravens? They're just really just putting the rookie on the pedestal. It's unbelievable.
Won't touch that one either.
Yeah, leaving that one well alone, I got to tell you, Remus. Well alone. Sticking with the Maple Leafs, Bob McKenzie tweeted last night about how poor Dion Phaneuf looked in his exhibition debut. He prefaces his comments by acknowledging it's only game one of the exhibition season.
Right.
But is it concerning that the Leafs captain couldn't get himself emotionally ready for his first game with that added responsibility?
No, it isn't, because it's an exhibition game, and I really, you know, it's, don't read too much into it, especially for veteran players. I think I talked about earlier in the show, young players are more important than veteran players. Having said that, Dion Phaneuf hasn't played well in the past 2 years, especially in his own zone. His offensive game really didn't succeed that well in Toronto last year at the end of the season. But defensively, he's most important. He wanders. He makes bad decisions. He makes bad reads. He gets caught up at the blue line. He also makes bad reads in his own zone. I mean, this is not an issue that just happened upon Dion Phaneuf. And the Leafs got him at that price because he was playing so poorly and because he carried a big tag. Now they want to name him captain and put a lot of responsibility on him. Fine, but based on his play on the ice, he hasn't warranted that much attention and that much responsibility in the dressing room.
That's why I'm surprised he's the captain of that team.
Well, Drew, you got no other way to go.
I know. I mean, you've mortgaged your future on him and Phil Kessel.
Well, you didn't mortgage your future on him. You give up veteran players, really.
I know,
but you're naming him the star of your team without him warranting being the star.
If he performs poorly this year, is he going to be the captain just for one season? I mean, could they take the C away if he plays poorly this year?
Probably not, but who are you going to name captain there, Drew?
Well, I don't know. That's the problem. It's a really... I mean, it's just awful. It's ugly in Toronto.
It is.
Final question here on Rapid Fire. Of the first-round picks from this past draft, who is the most likely to have a significant impact this season?
Well, based on opportunity, I mean, you're going to go with the number one guy. You're going to go with Taylor Hall. And obviously, number one guy. Yeah, but you know what? Tyler Seguin may not get as much responsibility. Taylor Hall's going to play big minutes. I mean, he's lined up with Sean Horkoff right now. They're going to give him a lot of responsibility. He is going to play a lot. He's going to be in the NHL. So by that, I think he is. Just based on that. I mean, obviously, other guys may be forces, but I think guys like, you know, Gudbrandsson or Sagan, I mean, if they're not sent back to junior, well, they'll be playing limited minutes. And you know why? Because to be honest with you, the biggest reason is their teams are a lot better. I mean, even Florida's better than Edmonton. So Edmonton's the worst team in the league. They have a lot of time and they have an ability to play Taylor Hall in situations where he might not succeed all the time, but he's going to get a lot of opportunity. So he is the number one guy there. I mean, it's hands down, I think.
Okay. That's it for Rapid Fire for this week. It's time, Denise, for Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers and Jeers.
Cheer. The Winnipeg fans, they're already sold, I think, 11,000 tickets for an exhibition game in Winnipeg.
I'm going to cheer EA Sports on their release of the NHL 11 game. It came out last week. I've been playing it nonstop since.
I'm going to cheer
TSN2 for the new segment, The Morning Rush.
Cheers and Jeers.
Cheer or jeer. Richie.
You know, I've been wavering back and forth, but I think you brought up one earlier, and I think that's going to get my jeer. And my jeer is going to be the way that... Yeah, well, the new media has handled that Pat Byrne situation. I think word spreads too quickly, and I think the people need to just take a step back. And the first story may not always be the best story and the most well written story. And I think guys like Bob McKenzie, I commend guys like Bob McKenzie who are able to get news out there, but also put time into articles like he did today for his Detroit Red Wings article or things like that. Being able to have a balance and understanding what needs to get out there and what doesn't need to get out there, and you can do it both ways. And I think in a time now where there's a lack of responsibility, everybody's guilty of it. But I think it needs to. I think this needs to be a reality check because it's somebody's life we're talking about, not a player. Not, as I said before, not a trade or a free agent signing. So take a step back. Realize what this is, and stop getting locked up in the internet and Twitter and I need to get this out, and realize what we're really talking about here. And if people do that, I think that if everybody takes a little bit of a step back and everybody's very much equally responsible, I think the game and NHL and hockey media will be better off for it, and the fans at the end of the day will be better off for it.
Well said, Remus. Cheer or jeer?
I'm going to like to cheer this week. I'm going to cheer the Winnipeg fans, all 13,000 plus that showed up to the MTS Center. You know, for me or for us, we know it's an exhibition game, but on the way to to their station today, I saw a little boy and his mother walking to the arena, with a Hawks flag and a Hawks jersey. And it was really nice to see in Winnipeg and just everyone giving their support, for the game. And it shows, coming out showing your support for this game, may or may not mean, we can get an NHL team, but it's, good that, everyone's out there.
It's a precursor to getting your team back.
And you know what? The one good cheer, Michael, and I think the one thing that I want to see is enough of the I coached hockey a couple of years ago, and the Vancouver Canucks jerseys, the Edmonton Oilers jerseys, and the Calgary Flames jerseys, the Chicago Blackhawks.
I think those will go away so quickly.
And I don't want to see kids wearing those jerseys anymore. I want to see kids wearing Winnipeg Jets jerseys.
Those jerseys will be burnt. You'll be amazed at how quickly allegiances will turn.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers tonight by cheering Dallas Stars forward Brad Richards. He donated $500,000 to a local Prince Edward Island hospital, Prince Edward Island, of course, being where he's from. That money will be used to start an endowment fund, which will help purchase medical equipment for children in need. So I think that's terrific. A guy digging into his pocket, he's donating, $500,000, so it's significant money. And he's put his name next to an endowment, which undoubtedly will increase and will certainly provide positive benefits to the local Prince Edward Island medical community.
Amen to that, Drew. And he actually did that for one of the reasons was his friend, childhood friend, had passed away.
I didn't.
Unfortunately,
I didn't see
from a brain tumor. He was 7 years old or 6 years old. Awful. And so Brad Richards giving back to the community, giving back to hospitals, and terrific cheer.
Okay, excellent. That's good. I didn't know that part, but kudos to Brad Richards.
Absolutely.
Thank yous tonight. Thank you to Chris Mackey. He's from www.manitobamythbusters.com and www.mynhlincludeswinnipeg.com. He had a fascinating study. Go check it out on his websites. And he joined us live from the MTS Center, so we thank him for his time for talking about that study. A big thank you, of course, to Denise behind the glass doing her fabulous job despite this choice of Nickelback for music.
Hey.
Five thumbs up, one thumb. I should have jeered Denise for that play, but cheered for the other five.
I should jeer all the people who don't know how to drive when they go to a hockey game. Like, at least learn how to drive downtown. Come on now.
Do you have an all-request hour to plug this week?
No. Unfortunately, I'm starting a new job next week, so it's kind of over.
That's not an unfortunate
thing.
Well, because,
I won't be able to, be here to do it.
From what I understand...
You're not quitting the show, are you?
Not this show, no.
But, Denise, for the record, from what I understand, the 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. slot is available for the all-request hour.
1 a.m.
if you want to get on air at that point.
It's actually 3 to 4 in the afternoon.
Okay. Well, I know it's 3 to 4 in the afternoon, but if you're too busy with the work, you can come down and do it then.
Yeah, come when no one's really listening. Okay.
Come on, Denise. Take it easy on Drew.
Jeez.
Host the show.
Sorry.
Giving me a hard time here. Remus, can you respond to H-Bomb there in the Ustream chat room? Thank you. So big thank you to Chris Mackey. Big thank
Why
you.
Why did you say that?
I thought
airworthy.
I thought airworthy. Remus was. I needed Remus to answer. I'm not
even going to throw to Remus to talk about how to get us on iTunes.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly. Remus, go ahead.
If you want to get us on iTunes, you can either go on the iTunes program and search for Illegal Curve, or we'll have a link at the IllegalCurve.com website or on our Twitter, twitter.com/IllegalCurve, or Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. One of those ways. We'll point it out. Probably have a post up of the iTunes maybe tomorrow morning, but for sure by that time you'll be able to listen to it on your iTunes on your computer or easily move it to your iPhone, iPod, iPod Touch, Great. Apple Classic, iPod Nano.
Is Apple iPad? Paying you now?
I've listened to it. It's good.
There you go.
My endorsement.
Thanks. We appreciate that. So, of course, Remus mentioned all the good ways you can stay in touch with the Illegal Curve radio show via Facebook, IllegalCurve.com, via Twitter, @IllegalCurve, the IllegalCurve.com website. We'll have the copy of this week's show on it sometime probably tomorrow.
Yep.
The Ustream of this program will be available immediately after we're off the air. That's at www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve. Curve. A replay of the show will be tomorrow night in Brandon, Manitoba on CJ 106.5 FM. And a replay will be on Kick FM. That would be Sunday morning from 10 until noon. And, of course, like Rima said, you can download this program onto your iPod. And next Wednesday will be our two-hour fantasy preview show. Mm-hmm. So for all of those, all of you, tell all your friends if you're in a
pool.
If you're in a pool, you know, if you're in a pool, tune in next Wednesday. We're going to cover three guests, top to bottom. You will have all of your fantasy hockey questions answered for you next Wednesday here on the Illegal Curve
and
Radio Show.
If you have
show.
Questions, send them in to us.
That's right. Send us an email if you have any questions you want answered. Drew@illegalcurve.com or editor@illegalcurve.com, or you can send them on the Twitter. On the Twitter, I sound like Betty White there in that movie preview. Thank you to Ezzy. He's live at the MTS Center. He's going to be filing some reports, some interviews. We'll have those up on our various websites as well. Until next Wednesday from Kick FM Studios in beautiful downtown Winnipeg, we thank you for joining, and we wish you good night and good luck.
The Illegal Curve Radio Show has been presented by Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg. Tune in again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock for more of what you love. Don't slow down.